Ladies and gentlemen, my name is Davin Allen, TVA to you and me. You are listening to Comedy About the Pub. That's Cat P to you and me. The pub is fake. The guests are real. We are part of the Antica, or Antica, Italian for Antique, network of podcasts. Wow. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me today, across the table from me, professional voice actor, professional regular actor, professional Foley guy that you need when someone is either... That was drums. I was going to go with old-timey film projector.
Sure. That's right. Whatever it sounds most like.
We've just been watching The Man in the High Castle. It figures prominently. So I'm sure that's part of your work.
Absolutely.
Ladies and gentlemen, Jason DeLine joins us.
Howdy.
It is so good to have you back.
Always good to be here. It's been a while.
It only took, what, half a decade for you
to come back? Something like that, yeah. Scars have healed.
Before we get into what we talk about, mm-hmm. I'm going to let people know. First of all, let's talk about where they can find you. First of all, your comedy record review show. Have I got that right?
Comedy Album Book Club.
Comedy Album Book Club.
That's .com, so you can find it there. And you can search for Comedy Album Book Club. We have a page and a group, and I don't know why. One of my producers should be able to explain it to you. On Facebook, and that details the events going on. Yeah,
that's right.
The monthly show.
And your class show for the radio sketch, it's...
Wednesday, November 8th
there
at the Social Capital Theater. Again, you can find details for that on the Social Capital Theater's website.
It's a bunch of students that you have taken through the process of writing radio plays, performing them, and recording them.
Correct.
Beautiful.
It's more of a sketch comedy show than a traditional radio play, but yeah,
it beautiful. Should be fun. Here's where you can see me, folks, before we get into this episode. Saturday, November 4th at Comedy Bar, the November installment of Write 'Em Up. Ooh. You need to do this show.
I would love to do this show. It's a fun show.
You don't do stand-up, do you?
Very irregularly.
Okay, so you would come on as a writer then.
I would, yeah.
You've written.
Sure.
Right? You've picked up a pen. You're no stranger to paper.
No, I've seen
it. There you go.
Yeah.
You've made fun of people.
Oh, that's my forte, I would say. Yeah.
Coming soon to a Write 'Em Up near you.
Sounds
Jason
good.
Jason DeLine. I'd love to. That is happening.
Who's on the panel this week?
The panel this week is Terrence Balazzo. We have Derek Forgey and Kate Davis. The comics, let me see if I can get this right. I'm going to go through. It's Tamara Appleton, Cliff Knight, DJ Mausner, Dave Patterson, and Katie Westman.
Great.
There we go.
Great lineup.
I'm amazed I was able to spit that
out. Good job.
November 5th, that's a Sunday, I will be performing at Absolute Comedy here in Toronto. We have a fundraiser November 11th in Oakville. It is the O'Finn's Irish Temper. I love the name of that place.
That's a great
there
name.
Will be a fight. Who are we kidding? I'm also headlining Friday, November 17th in Burlington at the Legion there. Again, that is another fundraising show. Wednesday, November 22nd through Saturday, November 25th. I'm in Kingston. I am co-headlining there with Mark DeBonis.
Oh, nice.
At Absolute Comedy there.
Cool.
We also have Write 'Em Up on December 2nd. That's an installment there. And then Treading Water at the Gladstone Hotel, Tuesday, December 5th, again at the Gladstone. And then Thursday, December 7th through Sunday, December 10th, I will be at Absolute Comedy in Ottawa.
Full dance card.
That is. And then I think I'm doing a corporate out there somewhere in Mount Forest. Who knows? That's it. So we talk about many things here. We talk about, we open up with how we don't care for domestic violence.
Yep.
That's a great open. That's a great open.
That's our hook.
Yep. We talk about what you can do to change the world. What you can do to make the world a better place.
And what you can't do.
And what you can't do. And we also talk about, if nothing else, you're on Star Trek.
Did talk about that.
That's right.
I was.
There is a space mammal that he has to deal with. You get to find out when Jason and I talk in your ears right now. We just keep dodging bullets with this guy, and I don't know why.
No messes since Thanksgiving.
No.
Eating his food, doesn't freak out if he misses a meal. That's you got dog luck, my friend.
I don't know, but then there are times like I say, there are times when I wake up in the morning and once in a while when I wake up, you know, I will. It's a time when I kind of remember back to the days of I didn't need to worry about anything.
Yeah, pre-responsibility.
I could just get up and go about my day and not worry about something shitting in my kitchen if I didn't pay attention to it.
Right.
Right?
Depending on your night the night before.
Right.
It could have been you.
It could have been. Wait, who gave the dog corn? Who?
Wait a minute.
Wife, get in here. We know the stuff on the cob is bad for him.
Does she answer to that now?
What?
Wife?
The wife? Not in that tone of voice, let me tell you that. She is not a fan of that. It's like, yes, shove it up your ass. We have a very 1950s sitcom-style relationship, except she's the saucy one.
That makes sense.
Remember, when did that pivot happen, that sitcom dads became dumb?
Well, I mean, you could argue that Alice got the best of Ralph quite a bit on the honeymoon.
Okay.
You know? I mean, so I think that's not new. Yeah, I think it was often. I mean, the 50s was a different story than 50s sitcoms. Mm-hmm.
Because let's be fair, that's the history that we're trying to get back to.
Well,
right? That's the America we're trying to make great again.
We're America? Okay,
right.
Yeah, yes, you know, we are.
That's what we're trying to do.
Pro America, yeah.
Right, absolutely. Yeah,
make it, what is the, there's a slogan.
This is us. A lot has changed, Jason, not just the kitchen since you've been here. We are now part of the InfoWorld, InfoWars Network, so
I see.
Kind of the Canadian branch. We're like the new rebel, we like to call ourselves.
Yeah, the new rebel.
Yeah.
Listen, something just came up.
What, your sense of decency?
Dignity and decency, yes. This isn't going to work. I'm going to eat, but I am going to eat chocolate before I go.
Uh-huh. Do it.
Yeah.
Do this. This is the post-Halloween. Did you do anything for Halloween?
Well, a few things. I went to a party on Saturday, a costume party. It was fun.
What did you go as?
Well, this is a longer story if you want to hear the birthday story.
We have nothing but time.
All right. So when I was a kid, my favorite movie was Back to the Future, and it has been my whole life.
Of course.
And
not mine, but I understand why.
Okay.
I understand why.
So I used to dream about playing guitar, slicking my hair back, being a high school student, driving, you know, all that stuff.
Going back in time.
So appealing. Going back in time, you know, all the cornerstones of you.
Yes.
Yeah.
Experiencing counterculture racism that you're directly in the face.
Exactly. Yeah. All that stuff had to be part of my life. And playing Johnny B. Goode. So when I was about 13.
if I may, inventing Johnny B. Goode.
Inventing Johnny B. Goode. Well, I wanted to somehow invent Johnny B. Goode.
Yes.
But first I had to learn to play it, then go back in time, then invent it.
Right.
So I bought myself a guitar when I was 13. It cost me $400, and I took lessons, and then I learned to play Johnny B. Goode, and that was a big part of my life. And then I formed a band with some childhood friends. Yeah, I was super excited to do it. Speed ahead about 22 years.
Mm-hmm.
About 4 years ago, my wife, Helena, and I decided to move up to Vancouver for a while.
You did.
And we were paring down. So I decided, you know, I've since bought an acoustic guitar that I play all the time, and I don't really plug in anymore. So I think I can part with this guitar I bought when I was
13.
Okay. So we got rid of it. And a month later, I was immediately saying,
Why did I do that?
Biggest mistake of my life. Yeah, I shouldn't have done that. Oh, well, tried to move on. Comes up every once in a while, and I dream about it. So that was 4 years ago.
Just picture you in Vancouver, just like, you know, you're standing at the window, and you're what, you know, just, you know, you've got your back to the wife, and she's like making, you know, pancakes for brunch or something like that. And it's a misty, foggy day. And she's like, are you okay, Jason? Yeah. And you're just tracing the shape of an axe, you know. Yeah. Some like Slayer guitar on the window. No, everything's fine, sweetheart.
The slowest air guitar you've ever seen. Just
with the,
a ballad for my guitar.
With the trumpet version of While My Guitar Gently Weeps in the background.
Yeah. One single tear in the shape of a guitar pick.
In the shape of a guitar pick.
So in the meanwhile, I'd also been talking about, I mean, Helena and I went to LA one time and saw Back to the Future trilogy back to back to back in the Egyptian theater. That was an amazing experience. There were like 8-year-old kids there who'd never seen it before saying, how's he going to get back? And it was just so charming.
What order do you watch those in?
Oh, 1, 2, 3.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah, yeah.
I may have my franchises mixed up.
Yeah. Yeah, there's let's not get into all that. Yeah, there's no preferred. I forget what the name of that thing is for Star Wars when you watch, I think it's 4, 5, 1, 2, 3, 6.
Yeah.
The machete version is what they call that. And then some people say you can cut out one altogether. You just miss some midichlorian talk, which is fine.
I don't know. I kind of like Senate races.
Well, then I have a trilogy for you, my friend.
Okay.
So we ended up going back to Toronto.
Mm-hmm.
And I had been talking my whole life about, oh man, when I turn 40, I should have the Enchantment Under the Sea dance and play the guitar just like
beautiful.
Marty McFly.
Right.
You know, so that dream has long since gone away. It's way too expensive to work all that stuff out. So the Friday before my birthday, mm-hmm. so this is October, or the Saturday before my birthday, October 14th,
uh-huh.
I went out for dinner with my wife.
Right.
And she said, oh, hey, a friend of ours is playing at this club on the Danforth, Sauce, a club we've both been to and I like. So we go there. I walk in. Surprise! My dad is in a white tuxedo and a wig, so I was very confused. I didn't know what was happening.
Okay.
He said, did you see the sign on the door? The sign says, welcome to the Enchantment Under the Sea dance and Jason's
beautiful.
Birthday party. And so dad was dressed as George McFly.
Beautiful.
So then my wife gives me a bag and says, put this on downstairs. I'm in complete shock.
Okay.
Which didn't wear off for a few days. I go downstairs. I put on what she had bought, a jacket like Marty's from the dance.
Right.
A red tie,
uh-huh.
a white dress shirt, the whole nine, the saddle shoes and everything. So mm-hmm. I walk out and she's in the hallway dressed as Jennifer from the 80s.
Beautiful.
So we say a few lines from the movie and uh-huh. we're kissing and it's fantastic. And then she says, okay, bring me upstairs. And then our mutual friend, Ian McIntyre,
right.
runs up to me dressed as Doc Brown. And
beautiful.
Says, Jason, there's something we got to do about your birthday. And I was like, sure, Doc, whatever. This is heavy. So then my wife sings Earth Angel to me with
beautiful.
A band that was assembled of various friends of mine.
Uh-huh.
And then she brought me up and said, you know, all Jason wanted was his friends and family to be here, but there's one thing he's been missing for a while. I'm going to try not to tear up
uh-huh.
here. She brought out the guitar. She found it. She went on Craigslist
uh-huh.
and polled people who had been to our garage sale. She found not a replica, the actual guitar.
The actual guitar.
The actual guitar I had sold in a garage sale 4 years prior, presented it to me, and then I had to play Johnny Be Good, and that's what I did.
While you're sobbing.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm trying to do it, yeah.
Exactly. And then we all had got drunk and ate pizza.
That's
and it was
beautiful.
Everybody was dressed in the 50s and we
that's
had a biff
awesome.
And it was absolutely
who was
insane.
Your biff? Can I guess?
You don't know him.
Oh, okay. I was going to I was going straight nug.
Nug.
I was going straight down the pipe for Nug.
Nug would be a good biff. No, it was my friend Brad, a childhood friend of mine. Yeah, he was just a tall guy. And it was funny because my wife had orchestrated all this. And then at one point, he leaned over to me and he's like, so am I supposed to, like, assault your mom? I'm like, no, I think we're going to leave that part out of the evening. Thanks.
I don't know.
Authenticity isn't
how
that.
How much beer has been consumed up at this point? Have you hit the tequila shots yet? Take a run at that.
Oh, I'm so glad I didn't bring tequila this time. Last time you had me on the show, I brought cheap bottle of tequila.
It was
a messy interview.
So as I was getting things ready for today,
smarty time.
Mm-hmm. I was sitting there going, Jason's been on here before. Yes, because it's been a while.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, what happened that? Oh, I remember that.
We had a double episode. I wouldn't shut up.
It's ladies and gentlemen, go back and find that one. You can go to comedyabovethepub.com and just search for his name. You'll find this episode. And then the other two. Do the regular order, the episode one, and then episode two. It gets
sloppy and doppy. There's one thing that stuck with me since that day. I think it was 3 or 4 years ago, maybe
uh-huh.
more. Atlas was on the show then,
yes.
Ian Atlas. And he mentioned something about tertiary education.
Sure.
And I thought it was pronounced tertiary, and I kept correcting him. And then there's a part in the interview where you say it, and you say... Yeah, when you're talking about tertiary or tertiary education,
yeah, right.
You were so gracious to pronounce it both ways.
Right.
But I was totally wrong. Apologies to you,
well,
Ian Atlas,
and
everybody.
I'd like to think that was the advent of fake news. Like, that's where it all came from.
Yeah, I blame that cheap bottle of tequila.
Simple misunderstanding. There's you know, where you start off, go, oh, some tequila would be nice on this show. That
yeah.
had a pub in the name. Cut to the second episode. You know what's wrong with the Jews? And off it goes.
Yep.
It's
a very fine line between one shot and racism,
uh-huh.
apparently.
It's so funny how much, like, you use throughout your day-to-day life, like movie quotes and things and stuff like that
yeah.
from films, and you sort of forget about them.
Mm-hmm.
And I had forgotten about Enchantment Under the Sea, and the only reason that it kind of sticks with me is that whenever my wife brings up like a theme, it's like so-and-so, you know, they're trying to figure out the theme of their wedding, and I just go, Enchantment Under the Sea?
Yeah.
Like, that's always my thing. I was like, oh, I wonder what the theme is for this year's company party. Oh, can I guess? Enchantment Under the Sea? She's, ha, 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 ha.
Well, I'm sorry you missed it.
Do you have those jokes between between your wife and you that are just like cute to you but nauseating to everyone else?
Oh, I assume so. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we put on a pretty good show for other people.
Right.
Hide our shame. but yeah, I suppose you want examples.
Well, I'll give you mine.
Okay, great.
Like, first of all, that enchantment, I would even give examples of jokes that you just love to return doing.
Right.
And yeah. just keep doing, even though you know it's getting on her tits, and you're just like, I can't not. Enchantment Under the Sea is probably one of those.
Okay.
But one of the things, and this has gotten me into slight bother, is because it tends towards domestic abuse, which we do not at all condone in this, but we'll be out somewhere like the grocery store, and my wife will make fun of me. And she'll, to the point where she makes herself laugh, and I just look at her straight in the face and go, someone wants to wear sunglasses tomorrow. And wow. And she'll go, ha, ha, ha. She's laughing, but the woman pushing her cart away from us frantically is not. And it's like, yeah. Oh, come on.
Oh, this is so interesting. Right. You know, in the last week, I have heard three people in the entertainment business mm-hmm. at work
oh boy,
joke about striking a woman.
And, beautiful.
But like, just throw it away. Like it's nothing. And it's so bizarre to me. And, you know, I want to say the people who are saying these jokes, they're not bad people.
Yeah.
I think one of them probably is.
name names. I want names.
Well, you know, there was I was shot Arrow in Vancouver last week.
Right.
And, we were in the car, being transported and, the woman who's sort of my co-star, plays my wife in the scene. She's in the front seat. I'm in the very back, and there are two other guys in the middle.
Right.
And the driver was frustrated that he had to go pick another person up because another woman who was one of the drivers didn't go to right. do it. Mm-hmm. And he said, oh, man, I got a backhander or something like that.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And then she said, whoa, no, I don't, that's not cool, and that's not funny. And I thought, okay, I overheard it. I was sort of on my phone, and it seemed like it was dealt with. Mm-hmm. And then at the end of the ride, she turned around and said, okay, you know, I don't want to make everything uncomfortable here, but this is uncomfortable, and I won't put up with a guy doing this,
right.
Making a joke like
yeah.
that. And I said, yeah, I'm with you. And then she said a few more things to him and said, you can't be doing this anymore, okay? And he was just like, yep. And the other guys were quiet, and then we left.
Right.
And then, you know, she talked to the powers that be about it, and I talked to them as well. Mm-hmm. And it made me really think that it was weird that we were all so uncomfortable.
Right.
You know, it's so easy for us to make women feel uncomfortable with mm-hmm. these comments. But if they tell us we are,
right.
now we're defensive. We're the poor babies. We're the sensitive ones.
Right, right.
Can't even take someone saying, please don't say that. It's right. harmful.
I am so happy that that story didn't end. And that's how I got thrown off of Arrow.
Yeah, right.
I guess last week, that up to last week, that could have been the case. But not now. Here's the other thing. If we're
gonna start. You mean that she got thrown off Arrow for saying something?
I was gonna say yeah. Because like, yeah. you know well, old yeah. boys old boys network.
In, yeah, they take in care of each other. Type Hollywood of thing. Yeah,
what it is. And right. you know, with everything going through, like,
and that was her fear.
It's too. Just so amazing, and I love the fact that Weinstein, the big one, has sent this ripple effect through mm-hmm. everything. I know you're just seeing guys dropping like flies, which mm-hmm. I couldn't be happier with.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it boils down to trust, right? That in all cases of making things, when I make that comment to my wife, is because she pretty much trusts that I'm never going to hit her.
Sure.
Right?
But yeah, I mean, this guy's saying it to a group of people he's not familiar with. At work.
Absolutely. That's completely inappropriate.
He doesn't know what past people have had. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a pretty fair bet. Every woman has had some kind of dealing with this right. kind of crap. And I thought it was great that she spoke up. But I had to think about it a lot afterwards because I thought, you know, when it happened, I just thought, oh, what a jerk this guy is. Well,
sure.
he's not my kind of guy. And then I kind of moved on. But then I realized we're sort of still letting people just be that kind of guy
right,
without
right.
holding them accountable for yeah. it. And it's just like, oh, that's just something people say. But it can't be.
Right.
And,
I'm glad that you and others are calling people on bullshit. I'm trying my best to do that.
I'm no hero, and I certainly haven't always been good at it.
But you play one on TV.
I try. I'm ready. I'm for hire, folks, if you know anything. But yeah, I don't know. Like, I'm always wondering what I can do without just looking like I'm doing something for making myself look good, you know? Right. And I think the thing really is just think before you say or do things. And like,
yes,
you know, maybe take someone's feelings into account. And if they tell you that they don't like what's happening, maybe that's okay.
Yeah.
You know, it seems pretty simple. And the people who resist so much to this is blows my mind.
Uh-huh.
Like, why do we need to hold on to this power that us white men can say whatever we want about anybody and not be accountable at all? And it's, you know, it's crazy. That's not equality.
You have to know. It boils down. This is the single most important rule of comedy. You have to know your audience. Right? And when I say that, depending upon the audience, the joke that you're trying to tell, you have to know your audience, as in be friends with them and know and create the context. Like, if you were ever going to, I am certainly not ever recommending that anyone do just wake up in the morning and go, I'm going to write a joke about domestic violence.
Right.
You can. And A, you better be on the right side of that argument. And B, there is so much writing that needs to go into that.
Oh, yeah.
That you, and this is what drives me nuts about the comedy community as a whole, is when young comics, and when I say young, I mean like new to the experience.
Sure.
I'm not saying necessarily young, but like young to the craft.
Yeah.
See someone like Louis C.K. or Patton Oswalt or someone, or Dana Gould, who can pick apart topics like racism, assault, rape, AIDS, 9/11, all of these things. And then just go, huh, I can do that too, because they did it.
Right.
Is that what is being missed here is that they've been doing it for 30 plus years.
Yeah.
So there's a craftsmanship around it
and
you can't shortcut.
The best stuff. I mean, I was talking with our friend Derek Forgey a few weeks ago, and then he asked me, I was a guest on his talk show, the 10-minute talk show.
It
was super fun.
Love that show.
And yeah, how can you not make 10 minutes to do that?
Right? It was one of my favorite spots I've ever done in my life.
So much fun, eh?
It was so great.
Yeah, a lot of great energy. So he asked me, is there anything, he said, you know, you're known for your laugh. People love to have your laugh at their rooms in Toronto, because you know I have a loud laugh, and I laugh at mediocre material.
you're coming to every one of my album recordings.
And so he said, is there anything that you don't find funny, anything that you wouldn't laugh at? And I said, you know, that you can laugh at just about anything if it's told in the right way. You know, there are people who make jokes about racism or abuse that are mean-spirited and an easy shock laugh, and it's not funny. But the kind of humor I like is making fun of the people who are racist and sort of deconstructing that and making them look like the ignorant, exposing ignorance, I think is the way to do it that makes it interesting and makes it funny and calling light to it. But just making fun of a victim is not.
No.
And people don't understand the difference.
Punch up or punch down accurately.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? Mm-hmm. There's plenty of people you can make fun of that are beneath you because they think you're above you.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
So
status is a really interesting thing in comedy.
Yeah.
That works. Yeah.
Like, I am finding it very hard to take seriously the Trump supporters who suddenly are whining that they don't have health care.
Right.
And I just adore that. The headline I saw today is that the Virginia coal miners are refusing to take retraining of skills because they still believe that Trump is going to save the coal industry.
Oh,
and I was just sitting there thinking, this goes beyond idolatry and blind faith in someone. This is now Darwinism.
Yeah.
Like, it's now traipsing.
Yeah, no kidding.
It's now traipsing toward, I don't want any help. Okay. Enjoy no health care, too.
Go jump off this cliff.
Yeah. It's just so fun.
It's pretty sad. And it's amazing the delusion that people have, you know, to just think they're going to be rescued somehow because they've been treated poorly. And they've been told they've been treated poorly. And they've been told they're going to have everything back. And it's just not plausible. And if it doesn't happen, they'll have the Democrats to blame. And,
right.
You know. It's an amazing system Trump has made.
It is. I talk about it in my act. It's like watching when you drive into African Lion Safari and the monkeys somehow jimmy the hood of your car and just start ripping shit out.
Yeah.
And you just go, I didn't want that to happen, but you got to hand it to them. That's pretty clever.
I drove into the monkey house.
Look at that. That's my fault. That's my fault. Look at them control Z-ing everything they did at the plant. Okay. So there are arguments up here, like how is the tea, by the way?
It's great. So yeah, we have a loose leaf tea here,
yes,
which I've not had before. I've had tea in a tea ball and of mm-hmm. course a tea bag,
right?
But never just.
I did not. I'm not.
Yeah, this is just salad in a glass salad, with hot that's water.
It.
Really,
that's it. This so, literally is leaves. I went into the yard. I yanked some leaves out of the dirt.
Oh, that's what you're doing out there.
Yeah.
I asked where the washroom is, and I came up. You said first door on the right or whatever. Yeah. Just go upstairs.
Right.
And then you're prowling around in the backyard. I can see through the window, and then you quickly run into the house. And I was like, what's the correlation? There can't be a correlation here between me going to the bathroom and hanging out outside the window.
I have to prime the septic system.
That's the least of my worries.
This is the only podcast that's off-grid. I bet you didn't know that, Jason.
I didn't know that. It's amazing how well-lit it is. And
we actually just run the – we have a battery that we attach to the dog when he has his zoomies.
That makes sense.
That's it. that's mint. And sometimes you can jazz it up with a little bit of ginger.
Yeah, I wasn't offered that option.
I just thought of it now.
I see.
I just thought of it now.
Mid-podcast. That's tough.
But, that's pretty much – you're lucky you got a cup.
I am. I'm very happy.
The
I should ask for a fork.
Here, use the end of a pen. That's fine.
It's getting classier by the way.
Yes, would you like a would you like a pencil I stole from Sound Advice? Would that be good? One of the many great recording studios we have in here. He says as he stares at a dude with a tattoo notebook. So there is no end of thievery in the voice community.
No.
I meant to tell you this downstairs. So like the dog itself is creating a nice challenge, especially around audition time.
Oh yeah.
Because
when you need the quiet.
Not even just that. Like, for like home auditions when we record our thing and stuff like that. Yeah, you just need to sneak upstairs and
sure.
My agent gets back to me. Why is everything whispery? Because I don't want to wake the fucking door. Just choreographing, like, me going to auditions and stuff like that
right.
with the dogs. Like, you know, we're trying to crate him and stuff.
Yeah.
But finding out that he loves yogurt was probably the best thing.
Is that an accident?
So my wife likes reading. Oh, and she'll get back to me with things like, we should try this. Like,
right.
she is
probiotics
she is,
and all
she
that.
She is the chef in the house.
Sure.
Who does the cooking in your house?
Well,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a range of what cooking is. There's a whole spectrum of, you know, KD to foie gras,
okay.
I guess.
All right.
But still, she probably does 90% of it.
Okay.
That's probably more. I'm good at ordering food.
Okay.
She does that too.
First of all, if I may side note here.
Sure.
And in fact, Darcy, no commercial this week because we'll do this. Allow me to tell you about one of our sponsors.
Please do.
HelloFresh.
HelloFresh.
So what you do is you go to HelloFresh.ca.
Okay.
Right? And you can pick food menus on there. They ship you a box with everything in there, right?
To make a thing?
To make a thing.
Oh, wow.
For example, the first one of these I ever made was shrimp and grits.
I had grits.
I had never made grits before.
Cool.
Right?
It's a hard thing to make, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah.
It is. Not here.
Really?
They give you everything except the pots and the water. That's it. A little bit of oil, salt, and pepper.
And it's got a recipe, obviously.
Got the recipe. It cool. times it out. It's got pictures so you can't get confused. Well, right?
You'd be surprised.
If you can do it, I can do it. Look at who you're dealing with, dude. So I made shrimp and grits the first time. They were cooked perfectly. And everything, like I say, it's like enough for like two people. You get the two-person box and it's done. You get like three meals out of it.
Really?
That's and if cool. you use the coupon code CATP50, CATP50,
yeah.
you get 50% off your first
box. Yeah, you've been doing this 50 years now, haven't you?
Yeah, that's, 50 years. That's right. CATP50.
That's great. Right.
I am a grizzled old man.
You sure are.
I am the Rip Van Winkle of podcasts. I can't recommend it enough.
Okay,
you should give it a shot.
So is there different packages? Like it comes once a week and it's an ongoing subscription?
Absolutely. You go in, you fill in your details and say, I want this. And in fact, do you have any dietary restrictions at all?
I try to eat vegetarian.
Okay. So you can do all that. They have vegetarian options that you can select. Bing, bing, bing.
Sweet.
And then in they come.
Right on.
And you'll have so many things. It's literally open box to the plate, 30 minutes.
Really?
Yep.
Wait a second.
I have timed it.
So you can order it or you...
No.
Oh, you mean from the time it gets to you to making it and it being ready.
The time that you go, I want shrimp and grits. You go to the fridge and start the timer.
Right. You
pull out that box for shrimp and grits.
Wow.
You get in it. So it's HelloFresh.ca.
Yeah.
like that. And then use the coupon code CATP50.
CATP50. And what does that get?
50. That gets you 50% off.
Oh, that's what the 50 means.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Great. So do that.
I will.
Look at us. We just worked. We just worked together.
That was within the top three easiest gigs I've ever had. Yeah.
You and I have never worked together, have we?
No, I guess we haven't. No. I mean,
we did. We were on the same show.
Shows
once.
And stuff. Yeah.
But never like in same studio.
No,
or
I don't
on
think
set.
So. Nope.
No.
Nope.
I can't imagine what the work would be outside of voice work that you and I would work on camera.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
I don't know what we cast us as.
Yeah. We're too late for the stoner comedy.
Uh-huh.
A little too early maybe for the midlife crisis comedy.
Right.
Yeah. Part of a crowd at a basketball game.
Sure.
Maybe the two other friends who come to the
extra
basketball
work.
Game.
Okay, that's great. Lovely.
Well, we could probably shout woo and get...
That's right. For woo. Did you use that? Do I get a substantial snack now? Do I get
out
that?
Out of here.
The reason I brought up cooking is my wife is the cook of the house. She knows what she's doing.
Right.
Knows her way around a kitchen.
Yeah.
Knows her way around every kitchen.
Cool.
You know, in fact, she'll ask, where's your spatula? And I go, I don't know. No, that's a new kitchen.
Yeah.
But now she has been able to do it for the dog with these Kongs, which are just like, right. You know, rubber, like vulcanized rubber things. That you
have to work at it to get it
so
out of
there. Yeah. Like by the way, when he's getting to the end of that thing, it just, as I wrote on Facebook this past week, it's hard to tell when he's eating the Kong or someone is doing Foley work for the opening scene in a Taco Bell bathroom. It's it's just plunger noise after plunger noise. So she's finding all these recipes that he likes, like dogs like this. Well, let's try these things together. So peanut butter banana up to this point was the top shelf. That is what he adores. He is eating better peanut butter than we do.
But then
frozen blueberries, which we knew he liked, and frozen yogurt. Jesus goddamn Christ.
His favorite thing.
I was buying groceries the other morning because we had nothing in the house, and I went, I'll go. And then I looked at my phone because we write down. Do you ever like use your phone to like keep notes on things?
Oh, for sure.
Where you just go, okay, so I have an ongoing grocery list.
Yeah, yeah.
It now has a separate one for the fucking dog. So I've got a separate section there. And so I saw like applesauce and yogurt. I'm like, okay, let's try yogurt. And so the guy is stocking. They've got a guy stocking yogurt, actually. Uh-huh. And I'm kind of looking around him trying to figure
out. On the
out.
Shelves, you mean? You don't on mean the there's shelves. Another patron who's creeping up
no,
on
no,
him.
No. I mean, like the guy
S-T-O-C.
Is STOC. STOC. Gotcha. Guy that works there. And and he sees me kind of looking around. He just finally, I think he gets frustrated with my presence. He just goes, can I help you? I'm like, yeah, I need low-fat, plain yogurt. He's like, okay, there's this stuff. And he goes, well, hang on. If you go Greek yogurt, points over here, he goes, I got a buddy, I got a customer here that swears by this. Okay. And it's like high in protein, zero fat. And he was right. It was like 18 versus like 9 or something like that. Or whatever.
Sure.
So I'm like, and I go, I'll level with you, pal. It's for my dog. And he's just like, ugh. And I go, I can't say anything, though. My cat loves beef stew. And I'm like,
I wish I could afford to eat like your pets.
I know. So I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'll take that. And he's like, you know, you don't own your pets. They own you. I go, yeah, that's why I'm buying them yogurt at 8 in the morning. Yeah. Right? So, yeah.
Wow.
I'm doggy whipped.
And is that good for a dog? Like, I always thought
It's got probiotics. If they're not lactose intolerant, they can handle it.
Okay.
And so sometimes you find a dog that, you are. And that's very easy to figure out.
I can imagine.
Yes.
Yeah.
You just give it some cheese and wait.
So I feel like that probably happened to me with a dog once. So I just made myself believe that all dogs were lactose intolerant. And then I never had to the waters again.
It could be putting through a shotgun afterwards when we're done with this podcast. Like, I don't know what I'm going down to.
Good
right?
luck.
Yeah. Yes. I could be looking at Agatha when I come down, and she just looks like, you know, the Houston family in Trainspotting after the sheet unfurls from Spud. And that's a Trainspotting 1 reference, folks. Yeah. Go back and find that.
It's a hell of an image.
Quite a tasty image.
Yeah.
Do you catalog in your head like favorite images in movies or television things, like where you just go, I will never forget that.
There are moment. I don't know about an image necessarily, but there are definitely times where I'll pull out a quote from something. I think there's a whole generation of us that just has an unlimited amount of Simpsons quotes that fit almost every occasion. I mean, after we watch probably 12 seasons worth of it.
Right.
Maybe 10 to 12 seasons. And just out of that, there was just a cornucopia of wonderful things.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't think I have a higher level of pop culture reference than the average nerd slash comedian.
You and I were on the same Simpsons trivia team, were we
That's
not?
True. That's true.
Right.
We won.
That's
we
right.
We won. We won donuts.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that was a great
And the
night.
Right to sit at the fancy table
That's
then
right.
next month.
Yeah, yeah. And then we immediately retired.
Yes. That's right. We just come in here for the elevated table That's just right. to thumb our nose at you, please.
They still do that show. I'd love to do that again.
It's been going on for so long, and it's so great.
Yeah, it's really so great. Yeah, Chris Brazeau hosts that now, and yeah, she's a she was on our team at the time.
Yes!
She's a huge, crazy fan.
And then she took
Ian
it over.
McIntyre was on the team. Ian Atlas, yeah, she took it over. She was, yeah, it's become pretty huge thing.
I just have you done any trivia things beyond that?
Not voluntarily.
Okay.
I was in.
Was that a hostage situation?
Well, I had a
the trunk opens and your hooded figure is just shuffled into a sports bar on the Danforth.
Exactly.
Okay.
I had a trivia night erupt around me unawares while I was having a nice drink at the bar. And, yeah.
That's like ambush comedy shows.
Oh yeah.
It's the worst. You know the just want to have wings and watch the Jays.
Yeah.
Hey, I hope you guys like Humber students telling you rape jokes. What? No, I just hot and spicy. That's
tips
all.
Tips going down. I when I was in Vancouver last week, we went to a bar. They had a good deal on old fashions that night. Had decent music playing. Nice dimly lit place.
Right.
And then at a certain point in the evening, I think it was 9 o'clock. A bunch of people came in, and it was a Christian group, and they set up this like screen, and they were going to be projecting little movies about what it's like to be a Christian and stuff. And so
at 9 o'clock in a bar selling old fashions.
On like a Wednesday. Yeah. Yeah. And so maybe it was a Tuesday.
I have pitched comedy shows in bars with little success.
Oh, man. I don't know. Well, like, they had a lot of people. They had probably 30 people.
Well, okay.
And it was a
All
Tuesday.
All drinking iced teas.
And then we asked the waitress, like, is it all right if we stay? Is it going to be weird? And they're like, no, they're nice. They're fine.
Right.
And I said, okay. But then what we didn't count on was right before they set up their TV thing, their projector, all the music cut out.
Right.
And when you've got ambient music for about an hour in a bar and it just stops, it's weird.
It is. It's like, it's that needle dragging across the record, and they was we just have to talk to each other now?
Yeah, and I used to be a radio guy. Anytime I hear music stop, I get a little flutter in my chest, right? I'm like, what's going on?
Yeah.
You know? I gotta put it back on, whatever. And so it just got weird, and then they put their projector on, and it was just this guy telling these weird, goofy stories, just real lame.
Like, goofy Bible
dad
stories.
Comedy stuff. Okay. Yeah. Like, well, he's going on about you know, we don't talk enough about prayer. And the truth is, prayer is very helpful. And I was like, okay, I can understand where he's going. And then he said, the truth is, there's no more important thing you can do than pray.
Huh.
I had to leave shortly thereafter.
Sure.
All that thoughts and prayers stuff that we get in the States after all the gun violence and stuff. Like, to have someone say that's the most important thing.
Right.
Just... It made me mad.
Yeah. It's the only thing that keeps the air moving, you know, that's it.
Yeah, right.
You want sunshine tomorrow? You better pray for it.
Yeah. 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 I mean, and I'm the complete opposite of that guy. Like, the least important thing a person can do is pray. I mean, I could see an individual that helps with maybe meditation or just helps them deal with stuff that's going on, but it doesn't. And then there are other people who say, well, it puts a good energy into the world. And maybe you're a better person, some people, if you pray, sure. But you're not stopping anybody else from doing anything or putting any change into the world. And to think that you've contributed by doing that, I think, is really selfish and lazy and
It completely misses the point of what prayer is. It's an internal dialogue between you and whoever it is, the invisible person that you think
is
leading
you,
right?
Yeah.
And by the way, my dad was a minister.
Oh, wow.
I understand the concept of, you know, higher powers and that sort of thing. All I'm saying is, whoever your bearded gentleman or woman is in this, I'm not saying
has
she's
to be
bearded.
A beard, man or woman.
It has to be a beard. You know, I go back on that. It has to be okay. bearded.
Thank you.
I'm glad you look at Muhammad. You look at, you know, all the bigs had beards, right? So right. you yeah. can have a female god, but just beard yeah, her up. That's all I'm up. Saying. Slightly circus freaky, but you know, maybe like I don't know, you know, sexy lumberjack. Maybe
it's hard not to that. Think a bearded woman wouldn't be wise, right?
No, think of all the shit she'd have to deal
yeah.
with.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know,
first
yeah.
of all, woman, she's yeah. going to be dealing with a lot of shit, as we are seeing coming out in the press these mm-hmm. days. But throw a beard on her, man.
Yeah.
Man, it's she has seen some things. So that prayer is it's not a public thing. It's right. a private thing. You can have someone lead it.
Yeah.
But it's this is your connection to your guy
right.
or gal, whoever it is.
Right.
And so that's you. Shut it. You don't yeah. get to brag about it. You don't get to say, hey, guess what I just prayed for?
Right.
A yeah. gun violence solution that still lets people have their guns.
Yeah.
That's no.
And you're right. It does completely miss the point. It's a pat on the back
yeah.
that isn't what it's about at all. And they feel absolved of making any kind of real contribution.
Yeah.
And that's the most unchristian thing I can imagine, right. actually.
What you do is you go out, you provide your activism, or you help someone, or like you mm-hmm. work in a soup kitchen, you just yeah. do it quietly. Then you come home, you kneel by your bed, you clasp your hands, you look up and go, how is that, big guy?
Yeah.
And then boom,
how do I get, do better tomorrow?
You feel the warm pat on the back, and then off to bed you go.
Yeah.
And I don't need to see your Facebook post about it.
No.
There you
no.
go.
Yeah. This all of social media sort of distorted just how we live our lives and how publicly we do it.
Mm-hmm.
And we're always just, it seems like everybody's just searching for likes, you know?
Yeah. yeah.
We're all trying to get that pat on the back, and then we get addicted to it.
Uh-huh.
We're used to having people say, you're doing great. We don't have face-to-face with our 10 friends, but 1,000 people are liking what
no,
we do.
Exactly.
You know, it's
guess what?
I worry for the kids.
Jason, the reason you're here is I haven't seen you in a while.
yeah. Are we even taping this?
Yes.
You just wanted to talk
no,
to me?
There's no cables plugged into anything. I need to talk to you someone that isn't out. A dog.
You know? Yeah.
I just enough. Need to have like something that isn't barking at me. So I'm going, what? Like that's...
Well, it's good I didn't bring the tequila.
Yeah, that's...
We cut most of that out.
I have to do a show tonight and I'm not even performing at it. I'm judging. Oh. I'm judging a roast battle.
Oh, that's fun.
I'm looking forward to this.
Is it character roasts or is it...
No, I think it's character assassination.
Who's the roast, can you say?
It's a roast off. So oh. what they're doing
they roast
is
each other?
Like... Yes. So like it's
like a rap battle.
Yeah, it's like a ladder. It's like a squash ladder, like cool. Like your NCAA Final 16s. They got the people kind of pair off and it comes to the end. And
I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. Sure. I don't know how it's going to work.
back and forth and back and forth. There's rebuttals and
yeah.
whatnot, and then they vote on the end or you judge the end.
I love how roast battles have become the freestyle rap of the comedy industry
yeah.
now.
Yeah. I have yet to go to one, but I really want to. I think it's a fun concept.
You should come tonight.
I'm hosting my show tonight.
You got your show.
Yeah,
that's
yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Now, is this a regular thing that you do?
This will be the third show,
okay.
and we're doing it monthly forever.
Let's talk about this.
Because
it sounds so fun, and I'm gutted that I could not join you this evening.
You'll have to come another time. It's, well, for everyone, you put in your calendars, it's the first Thursday of every month.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, it's at 9:30 p.m.
Okay.
That could fluctuate in the future, but right now, it's at 9:30 at the Social Capital Theater,
mm-hmm.
a place we know well, Danforth and Broadview. And how this all came to be was I had the idea for, you know, like a book club. People are assigned a book to read and you get together maybe between chapters once a week or something and you talk about what's going on.
Right.
So I had this idea for a comedy album book club.
Right.
So there's no books involved, but we'd get together either having listened to the album or listening together.
Right.
And then we talk about it.
Nice.
So a lot of people thought, yeah, it's a great idea. I had about 100 people say, yeah, this is amazing. We should totally do this. Let's figure it out. And then I started figuring out where we should do this. And I thought, well, maybe, a big group discussion is kind of tough. Maybe we have people designated to talk about it. And I interview someone who picks the album.
Right.
So then it evolved into we could do this at a show and have people throw in like dues, like a couple bucks yeah. or whatever. And then we'll pay for the room and we'll get up on stage and listen to the thing and then talk about it. And then I had the idea that, well, if we're talking like this, why not make it a podcast?
Right.
And people who can't come can access it. And
yes.
So then it just kept evolving into that. So that's what it is. It's a live podcast recording / album listening party. Mm-hmm. And it's been super fun. The first one we did was an evening with Elaine and Mike Nichols. Elaine May and Mike Nichols.
Right.
And then we did Bob Newhart, the button-down mind of Bob Newhart. Mm-hmm. And then tonight we're doing...
The Smothers Brothers.
The Smothers Brothers, live at the Purple Onion, yeah. And Nug Nargang is our, who you mentioned earlier.
I would not have been surprised in the
least. Yeah, he's our featured guest. So yeah, everybody in the club, so to speak, the group on Facebook, mm-hmm. I keep asking, okay, suggestions, what album do you want to listen to? And then when someone makes a suggestion, I go, great, do you want to be the featured guest? And we'll talk about it. And then I bring on two other comedians. So tonight I've got Sherilyn Johnson.
Uh-huh, beautiful.
And Adam McNamara. Uh-huh. So a nice...
Sherilyn Johnson is a clown.
Is she?
She's literally a clown.
I don't know her I know her as an author and a journalist. Yes,
she's an author, journalist, and then she actually performs clown. I am not being facetious in the least.
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder if that'll
come out. She works on clown.
Cool. And I know she's a fan of the Smothers Brothers, and yeah, all of them are. And it's kind of neat to have.
How do you not be? With everything going on, like realizing how... to their detriment, they were so politically active in the 60s and 70s and helped kind of put the flame under a lot of asses in the community and went, fuck, if two white guys, one of them with a stand-up bass, is, you know, if they're doing stuff that can get them thrown off of television, what am I doing?
Right? And a lot of people don't remember that about them or don't know it about them. And they're, because they're so much of their material is so silly.
Yes.
You know, it's almost slapstick, goofy. And what I didn't realize, I hadn't listened to this album. This is their first album we're listening to tonight. And, you know, I like to listen ahead of time just so I'm prepared. And there are a few tracks that are just straight ahead folk songs. Mm-hmm. No jokes in the songs.
No
bits or anything. And that really surprised me. Like this is 1961. So the last two albums we did, the Elaine and May and Bob Newhart, were both 1960 and very early style comedy albums. Elaine and May's was a recording of a Broadway show.
Right.
And Bob Newhart was doing these one-sided phone conversations.
Right.
They weren't real stand-up. Mm-hmm. It was all very new. We'd had comedy albums before that, but like The Goon Show and stuff like that, a lot of just people goofing around, a lot of parody songs and just goofiness. The Smothers Brothers, it's very interesting to me, the idea of trying to sell this album.
Right.
Like, if you like folk music and you like goofy comedy, you'll love this. And they're not wrong, but
what the fuck does that Venn diagram look like?
Yeah, it's so weird. And tonight we cut down a lot of the music and tried to stick to the funny because that's more about what the show is. And I cut one track completely because there's no intro or anything. It's just a pretty folk song, but I didn't think we needed to listen to it. And
I would have gotten my coat at that point.
Yeah. And it's obviously very early for them. I mean, further down the line, they got into much more sophisticated bits and less of the music. And then when they got the show, they had the Yo-Yo Man and different sketches and different things.
Right.
But this is very early days, and it's very interesting. I'm really excited to hear what Nug says about it, why he's such a big fan. I mean, I'm a fan too, but more of the later stuff, more of the TV stuff. Mm-hmm. It's a really fun show to do, to dig up some of these albums that people don't listen to anymore or that this generation of comedians haven't heard.
Right.
And to just talk about it and, make sure you remember. That's what I think is really neat, to respect these comedians that came before.
I'm going
to
go through my vinyl upstairs.
Cool.
I have some vinyl. I have some comedy vinyl. In fact, I have the number one and number two albums that Bob Newhart had in the Billboard list. Like, he's the one guy who had one and two.
Insane.
Right?
Insane.
And never his first before. One, he was like, I don't know what I'm doing.
He's
like,
brand new at it. Yes. He was an accountant doing this for fun. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But it's like nothing anyone has ever heard before. And, you know.
Unless you're Shecky Green.
But if you're listening to that now, his album, it feels a bit repetitive because the style is the same. Mm-hmm. It's always this one-sided conversation. But he's so good at it. And and what I realized listening to it, which was such a treat, was that that type of comedy only works in an audio format.
Right.
Because he's telling jokes about stuff that you don't – that you would have known if you were witnessing it.
Right.
There's a thing about a driver instructor, and he said, okay, well, we're going to be okay, but maybe we should get off the median here.
Right.
So you find out that they're in the middle of the road on the – and – they would have been there for the last minute.
Right.
So if visually there would be no gag, but no. But his talking about it was what triggered the mm-hmm. the joke and the laugh. And to me, that is amazing. And we don't have as much of that anymore.
No.
You know, these days you listen to a comedy album and you hear someone say, "You ever see somebody walk like this?"
Right.
And then you hear the crowd laugh and like, this is a terrible comedy
album. You gotta stop buying Dane Cook albums. I thought we all collectively did that.
I've never.
Why are you still doing that? I always wondered that. It's like when you've got someone who's like an energetic comic who puts out an album, I'm like, why? Because their performance is that. It's a performance. It's not going into the audio medium.
Netflix special, sure. Right. But yeah, not everything translates.
Know this. When I record an album, and it's happening soon, when I record an album, there will be no movement. It's gonna be. I'm a lazy asshole.
I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah,
I'd like someone to go the other way and have the guts to do an all visual album.
Yeah,
the whole album is just, hey, look at this. there's nothing to laugh at on the entire album.
Right.
I mean, it'd be a better sketch than an actual album to make.
Yeah, it would be delightful. So you mentioned Arrow.
Yeah.
Let's go through the IMDb, I don't know what word I was trying to find there, but like, let's go through the IMDb folder of yours. Sure. Most recently, I'm saving that one.
Okay.
We're coming up on, let's go Arrow.
Yeah.
Did you move out to Vancouver specifically for Arrow or you?
No. The truth is we were living in Toronto during the Rob Ford era.
Don't blame you.
And, I fell out of love with my city, man.
Yeah.
I felt gross.
Why is that exactly?
Look, there's a lot of news articles about what happened. You go ahead. I don't want to relive it.
Oh, by the way, you can because it's Richard Farron, I believe it is, runs a Twitter feed called 4 years ago.
Oh.
And he chronicles what happened in this time 4 years ago to the day.
Wow.
And he tweets whatever the breaking Ford news was that day.
I cannot tell you how little interest I have.
It's entertaining. Ugh. It's thought-provoking.
Yeah,
and it's exhausting.
Exactly, And it's the third one that I don't want to relive it. I appreciate it, and it is an important part of our history for sure. And I hope I hope things were learned.
Thank God no one learned from it. As I've said before on this podcast and in popular conversations with other people and on stage, I think I used it once. Trump is the Ford years, but directed by Michael Bay.
Oh, God.
That's what it is.
That's a good line.
With explosions and fire. And yes.
What an age to be alive.
That's all right.
Anywho,
yes,
so we didn't, I don't know.
Rob Ford gave you sads and you left.
I wasn't loving Toronto, and my wife likes summer as opposed to winter, so we decided to just skip winter that year. So, the year before, we went through this awesome trip through the States. We bought a camper van, but it broke down, so we didn't end up doing that. We ended up flying around, but we went to Chicago, New Orleans, Vegas, San Francisco, LA, and Vancouver, and then we came back.
So I have not been to one of those cities. Guess which one?
Oh, one of them you haven't been to?
Yes.
New Orleans.
Out of the gate. Look at you.
Boom.
Yeah.
I can tell. I can tell by looking at someone if they've been to New Orleans. It's not you. It's just you. It changes a man.
Okay. Just reek of gumbo.
Yeah.
You know?
It's mostly gumbo.
Walking around the house with beads around my neck. Yeah. Okay.
Well, I think being in New Orleans, you realize that you're right to be afraid of the world. But there's nothing you can do about it.
Right.
And you get... I'm just joking. I'm not really contemplating. No, it's a spooky city, though, and it's fun. It feels like a Disneyland-type city, but not with that kind of product placement, if you know what I mean. Like, it's just a neat place to be. There's music everywhere, booze everywhere, vampire lore, Nick Cage's giant pyramid gravestone.
Yeah.
It's
God getting dildo fucked in a dog suit.
Anything you want. Anything you want.
Do you not watch Preacher?
No, I don't know what that is.
Well, I created a little bit of a spoiler there.
All right. Well,
all right.
Yeah.
God's in a dog suit getting fucked with a dildo that you can watch.
How many episodes do I have to watch before I get to that little nugget?
Quite a few.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
It's like a season and then about four in. Okay. Into the second season?
No, not going to happen.
Oh, dude, it's so good.
It's interesting.
So good.
All right.
Let me just sidetrack you here.
Sure.
Okay. The reason they go to New Orleans is they're trying to find God because God has left heaven and left everyone on alert.
Right.
So we've all wanted to do that. I don't blame God. The way the world is going right now, fuck it. I'm taking a week.
Should've
like
left
he just
years
does
ago.
That, right? Who's to say he didn't?
Well,
and that's why we're in all this problems.
Come back, God.
Preacher figures out. Preacher, by the way, has been chosen somehow to have this special kind of spiritual weapon placed inside him where he can force anyone to do his bit.
Oh, right. I've heard of that. Yeah.
And so two angels have tried unsuccessfully to try and get it out of him. The devil sends a bounty hunter after him to try and get this thing back. His best friend is a vampire and his former lover who he used to do bank jobs with and that sort of thing. So he has a very checkered past.
Quite a guy. Yeah.
Very checkered past. So he goes to New Orleans because that's where the music would be. That's where the jazz would be, and he knows that jazz is the music of God.
Huh.
And that's where he would go.
All right.
So, and then, you know, he finds God and doesn't realize that he's actually the guy in the dog suit getting fucked with a dildo.
How does he figure out that jazz is the music of God?
Why wouldn't it be? Why would it be here otherwise? I think it was a quote that someone said is like jazz is the music of God, is God's music.
Because it's not far from blues and rock and roll to me.
Right.
Not the music of the devil, right? It's all sort of...
That's how God works, right?
Yeah, double-edged sword.
Who's the right-hand man? It's devil. Right over there. Normally, the devil can be found in Georgia.
Right. Yes.
Which is not that far from Louisiana.
Right? It's a hop, skip, and a jump.
It is right there. Yeah. Right? So there it is. Wow. Looking for a soul to steal.
It's all making sense to me now. You've explained the Bible to me. I appreciate it, Todd.
Because Christ. okay, so you're doing all this touring around.
So yeah, we traveled around, like the West Coast quite a bit. But you know, we're Canadian citizens, and then we realized Vancouver's actually quite beautiful, and
there's still work out there.
And there was no snow in the wintertime. So we decided, well, we'll come back here in a year and go to the West Coast, but go someplace we can legally work. So we lived in Vancouver for 2 years, and it was. I missed Toronto when I was there. You know, Toronto is my favorite city in Canada, at least, and you know, in my top three probably in the world. Chicago, New York, Venice, they're up there. And coming back, you know, when I was there, I just I did some work there, but it felt like a baby city. It just felt like a small town dressed as a city to me.
Vancouver?
The mountains and the water and everything is very beautiful. I'm not a super athletic, outdoorsy guy. I like that stuff. But if you're not doing it every day, you're not taking advantage of it. And I wasn't doing it every day. So I felt like I'm in this beautiful place I'm not taking advantage of. I'm not really in a city like Toronto that never sleeps type of deal. And there was a lot of non-union work there, which I can't do.
No.
And not a lot of union work. A lot of the head offices for you know, clients and commercials are Toronto and Montreal, and that's where most of my work is. But I did get some opportunities to be on some cool stuff. I got to be on Arrow, and I got to be on My Little Pony.
Right.
And so because of that...
That I want to talk about. Forget this Arrow nonsense.
Yeah. Well,
give me some brony stories, pal. Let's hear this.
I wish I had some. I haven't met many bronies yet. I'm going to a convention in Seattle in next year.
Oh, dear God.
Yeah. I'm actually really looking forward to it. A lot of the people from the show are going down, and, you know, they treat us all very nicely. Mm-hmm. And, I've never been to Seattle.
Right.
And lots of fans come and want to meet you. And I've been to conventions before for other cartoons I've done. And it's really the only time you get to meet the kids.
Right.
And
hopefully that's who you'll be meeting.
I mean, you get teenagers too, and then you get some wacky people who are, you know, kind of obsessed with cartoons and stuff. But you know what, man? Like, these people just want some kind of connection, and to see them smile, like, it's fine. It's cool. And we all have our own weird things we geek out about, right? I mean, and this is theirs. And, it's neat. It's a different perspective. It's neat to see, wow, people are really into this, and it makes you feel lucky to be a part of it. You know, and I'm glad I did my job. I'm glad I worked hard at this because people appreciate it. And you don't get that in the booth. You know, you get one person going, okay, moving on.
Right.
But these people are like, you made me cry.
Right.
I saw that episode. And I'm like, wow, I'm glad I, you know, didn't
right.
phone it in.
I'm sorry, that's a comedy. Yeah, we're trying. We're not. Right. By the way, it's all a question of taste. You can like
sure.
what you like.
Yeah.
I will admit, the concept of the brony is somewhat creepy, but it's just a bunch of guys that like fucking My Little Pony.
Yeah, I mean, and but why do we think that? That's what interests me. Why do we think mm-hmm. that's creepy? I mean, I guess we've sort of built in that My Little Pony is for girls. I mean,
yes.
it was made for girls, and so guys shouldn't like it. And mm-hmm. we feel threatened if we right. like it. But it's not necessarily a feminine thing, a horse that
no.
has pretty colors.
Yeah.
And these shows are great, man. They're super
sure.
fun. And I guess it's probably predominantly female, like the characters in the show.
Mm-hmm.
But they're pretty kick-ass too, right? And yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is that appeals to me. If it's the collection of things, like a bunch of different symbols, a lot of different colors, mm-hmm. or if it's different personalities and they think the ponies speak to them. I'm not sure what
By
it
the
is.
Way, you raise a fantastic point in that, like, I look at like my niece and nephew,
mm-hmm.
and my nephew came up with the concept of this was 2 or 3 years ago, the concept for his Halloween costume
mm-hmm.
was Rainbow Bat.
Rainbow Bat.
Rainbow Bat.
Wow.
So he wanted the pride flag basically as the wings.
That's
so
amazing.
So it could be a rainbow bat. And I'm like, okay. And so people are like, oh, I don't know, Rainbow Bat. It's like, so what?
Yeah.
It's a rainbow. If you want to go as like, I want to go as a queen or a princess this year.
Yeah.
By all means, do it. It's like, as forward thinking as that is,
right.
for them and hopefully culturally where we are,
yeah.
There are things that I still have to kind of remind myself that, you know what, yeah, you didn't grow up with it, but it's totally cool.
Yeah,
and the whole concept of the bronyism is that. I mean, like, do I keep in mind? One of my favorite movies of all time is From the Hip, which is a Judd Nelson courtroom drama.
Oh, yeah.
So
I know.
It's
well,
a shit film, so right. I have no leg to stand on. Where's my From the Hippies? We don't have a convention.
No.
None of that. So to just find fucking joy in this life.
Sure, yeah.
And fuck everyone who says that.
And you know, this is something I think about sometimes, too, is that we're all expected to be just suddenly progressive now, right?
Right.
And I feel like I'm trying,
yeah.
and I have a certain things I believe, but I also have the scars of growing up as a kid
mm-hmm.
who wouldn't dare wear a rainbow bat
Absolutely.
Costume because
right.
I'd get the crap kicked out of me.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that I won't go as far to say that's PTSD or anything, but
right.
we have these attitudes ingrained in us. And we fear for other people because we know we would have feared for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we come from that era,
mm-hmm.
and although we're progressing and our attitudes are changing, we still, I think, we have these scars,
sure.
and you know, we have these memories of no one can wear this.
No, yeah.
What? It's crazy and weird because we were told that we heard
mm-hmm.
these terrible words on the playground that I hope they don't hear anymore.
Sure.
But you wouldn't dare wear a rainbow. A boy wouldn't dare wear pink.
Uh-huh.
You'd be labeled forever and teased and made
right.
fun of, and it's hard to just be in a different world than that now,
uh-huh.
you know?
Yeah.
I wish we had grown up in the world that it is now.
I think we needed to grow into it, though.
Yeah, that's
and
maybe.
Like you can't have that release without having some form of repression coming back from it. By the way, this is Comedy Above the Pub, about comedy all the time. but like when I think about it, like, yes, I put myself in the frame of I know what the right side of the argument is and I'm going to stand
right.
firmly on it. That said, there are moments that
yeah.
because I haven't been familiar with them, I still kind of clock me, right?
Right.
Like
yeah.
I'll be walking home from work one day and like two guys holding hands come by. I go, not what I'm used to. Haven't had it in my personal purview, but good.
Yeah, right.
And it's just like you can have that trigger, but you know it's like, I know it's right.
Mm-hmm.
There's absolutely no reason for it. And so through familiarity, it will erode my initial, what the? Oh,
right.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just,
sure.
it's that reaction. It's like,
right.
you know, I'm 48, you know?
Yeah.
I grew up in a small town. We had two
yeah.
gay fellas
exactly.
who didn't like each other.
Yeah.
So that was it. So you, like, I know it's not even a constant train. It's just like reminding yourself that you're on the right side of this argument.
Yeah.
And do your best to help and support everyone
yeah.
that you can, who's gonna have a rough time of it.
Yeah, that seems so simple, right?
Right.
It seems like a no-brainer.
Right.
But, you know, I worry about these kids who still grow up in these small towns who aren't exposed to, even people of different cultures, or different skin color or beliefs. You know, I was talking with someone a few weeks ago about, I don't think I want to raise my kids in the city. Straight. I'd like to go in the country. And I said, I think every child should, it should be mandatory that they spend 2 years living in Toronto,
right,
or a big city, to know what the world's like before their brain is messed up too much, you know?
Yeah. See before what you the start like. Hating a Muslim, meet a Muslim.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. I live in a very Muslim-dominant neighborhood, like 3 doors down from a mosque, literally. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I now have more interactions with Muslim people than I ever have before.
See, that's your problem. that's where you're going wrong.
That's right. I need more Muslim on my life.
Let's get out of there,
man. Oh, I see. Yes, yeah. I see. But yeah, I feel like so many people would benefit from that experience who just think, oh, they're off, I don't know, in the caves or whatever, doing evil. Mm-hmm. And then they just come down from the mountains to shoot people. Like, no, I just saw a bunch of them at 7-Eleven. Like, what are you talking about? Right. Like, they're people with families. And it's this idea of what people think people are is terrifying and powerful.
I work at Second City once a week. And in every class that every term, there's a wide range of people that want to learn how to do comedy and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And so they come from various different backgrounds. They're not all me, and I'm happy to see it. Mm-hmm. This term, light on women. I'd love to see a lot more women.
Right.
It's kind of white my class as well. Mm-hmm. And I love seeing and pitching other ideas to other cultures.
Sure.
And that way I get to learn. And when you start hearing about their experience, it's like, I'm learning nothing if everyone looks like me. If we've all watched the same shows and we all have the same experience, we all do the same things, how am I going to learn and grow as an artist to know that, your culture has this about it and I'm learning about that. Right. And this is your experience living in this world as the person that you are.
Yeah.
So learning to try and help pitch jokes and ideas from a completely different standpoint, I learned. Like, for example, here's something, right? When you're doing stand-up, it's typical for the host to go, ladies and gentlemen, your next act, blah.
Sure.
And you just, you know, they come up, you shake a hand, and then off you, and then they do their jokey jokes, and then you shake your hand, and then off you go.
Yeah.
So I had a Muslim woman in my class, and we go through this exercise, and blah, blah, blah. She messages me privately and says, about that handshake.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, right. And she was like, we can't do that. And I was like, I had no idea. So now I know. And she sent me an article of like, this is how you greet a Muslim woman. It's like,
oh, wow.
First of all, I am so sorry. I did not know. Forgive my ignorance. Now I know. And now I got that in my head now. So now I know, like, you know, when I have, you know, a Muslim woman in the class, is like, the first thing I can do is like, the other thing we do right now is pronouns.
Yeah.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah. No.
You just say, how do you identify?
Yeah.
Why? Because I want to make sure you're comfortable.
Absolutely.
That's all Second City is.
Yeah.
That said, I threaten my class that I will throw chairs at them if they go over time. So it's not all cuddles and hugs.
Right. Right? So what is the, what did she say was the proper way you're supposed to greet her?
It's, and she showed me, obviously, it was going to be a picture of Trudeau doing this. You put your hand on your heart and you just nod forward.
Really?
Yeah, you just go, please meet you. A little nod and hand on the heart. That's all you do.
I have friends who, and I'm a bit of a germaphobe. If I shake someone's hand, my hand feels different until I've washed it. It really does. It doesn't quite tingle, but it feels
okay.
It feels tainted.
You
in some
have
way.
More problems than Purell.
I can deal with it, but it feels different until I wash my hand. So, but I have other friends too who they prefer not having to shake hands. And we've got this societal thing where we just have to have this contact. And in Montreal, I hate the double kiss thing, and everybody does that. Christ, it drives me nuts.
Italy, brother.
Yeah.
I it took me a couple of days to get used to that.
Yeah.
And then, it's, you know, by the end of it, it's like, hey guys, bam, bam. You know, you go in for the double kiss.
I still like it. I like the hug. And what's really weird in Montreal is they're not huggers, they're kissers. Mm. So when you go in for the hug, they think that you're doing the kiss. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing a hug, they kiss me on the cheek, and then they're aggressively pulling back to switch to the other side. Yeah. And it feels so bizarre to me. And
you know what you do to them because they're in Quebec? Mm. French kiss. There you go.
Yeah, okay, that'll solve
get
everything.
Get right in there. They'll never ask you again.
I can't do that to myself.
You'd be eating Purell at that point.
Yeah, yeah. But I like the idea of not having to shake hands or hug. And if you, the hand over your heart and nodding seems very respectful and very nice.
Very solemn. I like
that a lot. Yeah.
Very nice.
You just, it's nice.
You handle it nicely.
And you give everybody their space too, which is nice too. Yeah.
Back it up.
I used to be a big, I would always shake men's hands. Mm-hmm. If they were a close friend, I'd hug them.
Yes, absolutely.
And then women, I'd always go in for the hug. Mm-hmm. And I don't do that anymore. I wait for someone else to initiate a hug. I will never turn down a hug, but I wait for the to initiate, because there's just so much that comes along with that. Just the assumed familiarity, and they don't want to rock the boat and might be doing something that's uncomfortable to them. Right. And like, there's really so much responsibility on our part to just, let's just make everyone more comfortable. Can we just do that?
So the way I've solved that is I do what Mike Pence does. I am not alone in a room with another woman unless it's my wife. So.
Really?
Yeah, that's how I handle that.
All right.
As soon as I see a woman walk into a room, climb out the window. I just leave. I go.
All right.
That's it.
Well, you've also got that body cam on, like the police too.
Yeah, exactly. That's right. It's right there in the lapel.
That's helpful.
Yeah. How come he's got his poppy on in March? Well, that's where the camera is. So this all going to say, so you're on Arrow.
Right, yeah. So while I was in Vancouver, I ended up getting on Arrow. We talked about My Little Pony.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yeah, this is an up and down podcast. We could probably split this into the serious and the funny.
No. It's all a big bouillabaisse of chat.
Or gumbo, if you will.
A gay roan tea.
Why not? Arrow. So, I was on an episode of that, I think, 2 seasons ago. Mm-hmm. And I guess in the episode Arrow, Oliver Queen and his girlfriend had moved out of town, sort of given up the superhero life.
Please tell me that her name was Bo.
No.
Okay.
Bo and
Arrow. That would have been beautiful. Jesus. Beautiful. Yeah. Did I write this thing? No.
What a shame. Missed opportunity.
This is me moments before I get thrown out of the writing room. Hey, guys, have you thought of this?
DCWB, right. Todd Van Allen. It's on your no-fly list now.
I don't need you to get me fired from something. No,
but I'm happy to help.
Come on.
I did a day on that, and we had a nice little scene. Me and Enid Ray Adams, my co-star, we played their next-door neighbors, and we were just this goofy married couple.
Awesome.
And so we had a really nice scene. And then they wanted us back for a wedding scene a year later. Enid Ray was able to be on it, but I wasn't, unfortunately. Okay. I was busy working on something else. But then we just came back this past week, and there was another scene where they wanted us in and interacting with Arrow and Bo, as you put her. So it was a lovely, lovely time. They put me up in a nice hotel in Vancouver for three nights and drove me just back and forth the set. They flew me there. You know, I felt like a real rock star. It was pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah. It was super fun. Nice people to work with, but glad to be home.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's my Arrow story.
Okay. Now, the one that I just saw recently and I was like, oh yeah, he can come on and talk about this. What?
Yeah.
Star Trek
Discovery.
The gay Star Trek. Tell me more.
Yeah. Man, it was so I auditioned for a few different roles on Star Trek. I could tell they wanted me on to do something. After trying a different, tried the security.
You're playing yourself now.
I'm just myself. Okay. So let's just write him into the show. Yes. Hi, I'm Jason DeLine, and I now work on Star Trek. I play a medical officer. I didn't have a name. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they bring me back, maybe they'll give me a name. So it was really exciting. I guess we can talk about the details of the episode now. It's been a week. So I was on it for 2 days, I think a Friday and a Monday, very long days, down at Pinewood Studios here in Toronto, and just a gorgeous, beautiful, huge set. I got to walk on the bridge of the Enterprise, the Discovery, rather.
Right.
I got to see, the most impressive set to me was the transporter room. Because there are no seams in any of this. There's no, you can't see, that doesn't look real. Like, the glass is glass, and they build real buildings, and it looks like the future. Like, I want these guys to build a house for me. It's absolutely amazing.
Well, it will be hollow.
Made
out of chipboard.
A hole held up by 2x4s.
Be careful what you ask for.
But it was just amazing set deck and the attention to detail. I got to hold a tricorder for part of my scene, which for those non-nerds is a equipment of Star Trek lore. It's been around forever. And But this thing was like 3 pounds. Mm-hmm. Like they made a real thing out of metal. It was awesome, and it lit up and everything. Mm-hmm. I got to hang out in sick bay for most of the time, and my scenes were in like this loading bay, and they had this giant. They call it a Gormagander. It's the space whale sitting in the middle of this like warehouse. It felt like
a space whale.
Yeah, and it was an amazing. Prop and the mouth open, and then Harry Mudd walks out of it in the scene that he's in, but it doesn't look anything like it did in the final show. They CGI'd over everything. They just built this, I guess, for the actor's motivation and for it to be movable so he could walk in and out of it and stuff. And we're reacting to the size of it. Mm-hmm. But it was huge, man. Like a 2-story high thing. It was giant. And I really liked the way it looked. It was pretty detailed and pretty cool. But they went a completely different direction. Different colors, different skin and stuff.
I just love that you were dealing with a space whale.
I was. That was my whole deal. And it took us a whole day to shoot this scene from multiple angles, and it goes by very fast. Sure. You know, I have a moment that felt very heroic and long on the day where I run to try to tackle the guy, and he turns around and shoots me.
Is he trying to harpoon the space whale? Is that what you said?
Exactly. Is that a euphemism?
How was your honeymoon? I just harpooned the space whale.
Bottom bum. So that I just vaporized so quickly when he shoots me. It's just a half a second almost. Right. But then a little while later, the scene plays over and time has changed and I don't die.
Right.
And then one guy goes for his gun and I say, "What, are you thinking this whale is armed?" And I kind of smirk at him. And I love that they let me be sarcastic. And that's how I did it in the audition.
Beauty.
It was fun. It's a fun character to play, sort of this sarcastic guy. Mm-hmm. And I got to meet Sinequa, the lead in the show. And man, she is awesome. I think she's an incredibly talented actress and so much energy. Like we were there for, I think it was 14 hours on a Friday, and they'd been shooting all week. And she's just ready to go, smiles, all positivity. Other people are starting to fall off a little bit. They're tired, but she brings them back up. And when it comes from the top down like that, it makes a real difference. Like the day on set was just a joy working with her. And she and I got along really great. She'd come up behind me and sort of jump and come down with her hands on my shoulders and just scream just to scare the heck out of me. And she said,
"Fuck off, there's a space whale here."
Yeah, it's terrifying when you're looking at down the mouth of a space whale.
Jesus.
And she just walk away saying, "I got you good."
Oh, nice.
But I got her back and she appreciated it.
So were you a Star Trek fan growing up?
Not a hardcore
fan. I've just got you fired from this.
I'm so sorry. Well, my dad was a big fan of the original Star Trek. Mm-hmm. And when I was a kid, I found that pretty slow going. Sure. Like it played like a drama when I was a kid. And
you could always tell which one were supposed to be the comedy ones by this incidental music.
Yeah.
There was the ding-ding-ding-ding.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, it's a Tribble episode. Ding-ding-ding-ding-ding-ding. You know.
No harm here.
Just the cocking of Spock's eyebrow will tell you. Oh, yeah. We're in for a laugh a minute now.
But then when Next Generation came around, I got into that probably around the third season or so. And I really liked that, actually. Yeah. I watched it with quite a bit of regularity. And the season finale is one of my favorite episodes of television. I loved it. And the movies with the new generation I really like. I actually love the movie Star Trek Generations. A lot of people don't like that one. But the crossover for me, I love seeing Kirk and Picard hanging out together. That was pretty fun.
Yep.
I thought it was a nice passing of the torch to the new generation. It was cool. I liked it a lot. And then I didn't watch Deep Space Nine. I watched some of Voyager. I like the lore of it. I like the design and stuff. I like the ships. It's really neat.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched some of Enterprise, which I think gets an unfair shake. I think it was pretty ambitious and fun. But this show I really like. It took me a while to get into it, too. The first two episodes of the pilot, they're setting a lot of groundwork.
Sure.
And then I think in episode 3, it really hit its stride. And a lot of people are telling me this episode 7, the one I did, is their favorite so far. That they really like. It's fun to have time travel. It feels very classic Trek. And there's a lot of energy. The crew's really fun. Anthony Rapp is amazing in it. And
what's he up to these days?
Anthony Rapp?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if you're joking or not.
Oh, yes.
Okay, good. Yeah. There's a lot going on with Anthony Rapp.
He's a hero of mine
for a few reasons.
He would have been well off set by the time that whole thing broke, right?
I guess so. I mean, it was only a few days ago, I think, that he... I don't know when he did the interview, but yeah, I think they'd shot the whole season by then. So yeah, I knew nothing about it.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, he's a hero of mine for a few reasons. For talking so openly about Spacey and naming his name. I mean, that's incredible. Takes a lot of guts to do something like that. And the fact that he plays a person on the bridge is super cool. And he was in Adventures in Babysitting, man.
Yes!
Like he played Daryl Cooper Smith. I loved him in that. And I got to tell him that, which is cool.
Okay.
He said he shot some of that in Chicago and some in Toronto. It was neat. And of course, he was in the original cast of Rent, too.
Yeah.
I mean, By the way,
so speaking of bronies and that categorization, we should have an Adventures in Babysitting group. I was one of my favorite movies.
Yeah?
Oh, yeah. I saw it like three times in the theater. Well.
Yeah.
Don't fuck with the babysitter. I was like, wow, you spent that one F-bomb well.
Yes.
That was very good. Yes. Way to keep it
Elizabeth
still PG.
Elizabeth Shue. And Bradley Whitford played her boyfriend in that, who has a storied career as playing a jerk and things.
I love... So we had Ivamy on here last week.
Cool.
And so he was talking, we were talking about the From Superheroes where they talk about all things nerdy. And he was talking about the Star Trek Discovery episode
that
they did for his podcast. And the amount of vitriol that was coming out from the fact that, there's gay people in Star Trek.
Man.
I'm like, dude, there's been gay people forever in Star Trek.
It's so ridiculous.
Why have they got a black woman leading the Enterprise? You know, why would they put her on the bridge? You go, because there was a black woman in the first one?
Yeah.
How about that? And it has always been a progressive tapestry.
Well, I would hope hundreds of years from now we can finally not be worried about that kind of stuff.
I mean,
Jesus. Yeah. How do people find the time to be bothered by that kind of thing? I don't understand it.
I love the people who let their blind hatred of something completely blind them from the fact that the thing that they love is against everything that they hate.
Well, and what's weird now too, is that everybody feels so invincible to share this stuff.
Right.
And they're just spouting it and like, oh man, like I knew there was always these issues, but I didn't know so many people subscribed to it, I guess. And I feel like the current presidential administration has given them a voice, and people mix up freedom of speech with hate speech. And I think the rules are a little different in the States than they are here for that kind of thing. But it's so sad. Who promised someone that Star Trek had to be white?
Right.
Aging white guys forever.
I would say right now, William Shatner.
Yeah.
He's not coming off well lately.
Really?
Oh, no, he's not.
Oh, I've missed some stuff.
I think he's on the wrong side of a couple of arguments.
Yeah.
There's a few stories he's not the hero of.
That's a shame.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah, that's a shame. Like, because someone in his position, you'd think, could really do some good, you know, with his fan base. And considering he was on a pretty progressive show in the 60s. But
hey, got to kiss a green chick.
Yeah.
Come on. It changes you, man.
I guess.
It changes you.
we've already had a woman captain. We had Janeway in Voyager. And I don't remember hearing any negative stuff like that. But people want to complain about that now.
Yeah.
People feel threatened, and I don't understand why. I really don't.
It was like when Lady Ghostbusters came out, which, and I know Ian McIntyre's going to hate this. I watched, before I went and saw it, I watched the original.
Yeah.
And reacquainted myself with that, which I saw in the theater three or four times. And it was fine. It's like, as I watch it now, I go, it's fine. It's funny enough. I can see where it would make me laugh when I was a kid. I could see where it would scare me when I was a kid. I get it. I watched the all-female reboot. Loved it.
Really?
Loved it.
Wow, that's great.
I thought
it
was great. I dare say, I think on a jokes per minute, I think it's funnier than the first.
That's interesting.
I think it is. And I think I can literally feel Ian McIntyre just crawling his way through his headphones, through the cabling here, and about to strangle me.
He and I probably have the same top four movies, which are probably Ghostbusters, Back to the Future, Jaws, and Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Okay.
I feel fairly comfortable guessing that those would be at least in his top 10 for sure. And those are probably my top four. I love Ghostbusters. And this new one was, I was on board for sure from the beginning, but I didn't think it was super funny.
Okay.
I felt like a lot of the characters in it were low status and were being kind of crapped on a lot. Whereas in Ghost, the original, they were always the smartest guys in the room and they knew it.
Sure.
And they were kind of always approached everything with a smirk. They didn't get, they didn't get really upset. They just sort of took things in stride and just handled it.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this movie, they had a lot of people just, they wrote the characters just angry a lot or sad or people disrespecting them. And I wanted them to be heroes all the time. I wanted them because, I mean, amazing cast and very strong, powerful women who I think could have played really fun, strong characters.
Right.
But I didn't like what they did with Kristen Wiig. They made her a really low status character. They made Melissa McCarthy's character sort of angry a lot.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it was a missed opportunity. I don't know if Paul Feig was the right guy to direct it. I think his heart was in the right place. But
sure.
He made a Paul Feig movie, not a Ghostbusters movie, in my opinion. And Paul Feig movies are great, but for me, it didn't match up.
So about that. I'm glad you liked it. About that. I did. I did. And again, I'm not taking anything away from the original. It did not rape my childhood.
Okay. No, no.
I looked at it. When I watched the original, it was like it seemed more caricature-y, whereas the female reboot seemed way more, though your points are valid on your characters, the jokes seem to come more from a character choice as opposed to a, like I go back to Rick Moranis's like kind of nebbishy character.
Sure.
Where it's just like, you know, he's this guy. He's like, you know, you'd see him on the stage of Second City.
Right.
Which is fair.
Yeah.
Right. Cause that's where he came from.
Sure.
But like to my point of like, I just think you're right about the Paul Feig kind of movie that was being made. Here's my problem with Paul Feig movies. Let me tell you that. The absolutely unnecessary celebrity showing up for no reason.
Right.
Can't stand it.
Just a little cameo.
Cannot. 50 Cent needs to be in a helicopter? Really, huh? Okay. Yeah. Right. We're bringing in Wilson Phillips just so someone can lip sync? Oh, lip syncing. That's great. Let's do that.
Yeah. No, I hear you. I hear you. There are easy ways to just give people a smile that aren't creative.
Yeah, the second someone forwards me a link and I just open it up, and if I see two people sitting in the front seat of a car, off. I send my laptop into a wood chipper. Fuck that guy.
The karaoke thing.
Oh,
that
I fucking hate it. Yeah,
no, I don't get it either. I don't get the appeal. I like karaoke and I like seeing my friends sing well.
Yes.
And I like being blown away by someone who just comes out of nowhere and does a great job. But I don't need to see celebrities wanking like that on television. That's not television.
I don't need to see the Dalai Lama lip syncing to Boogie Woogie Dancing Shoes with fucking Jimmy Fallon. Did I don't happen? Need that. No. But no one's shocked that it did.
No, I don't.
Right? It's like, of course that fucking happened. It didn't, but I bet you it did. Like, it's that.
Yeah, exactly.
I just hate where we are right now.
Yeah, it's true. The most ridiculous thing is probably happening.
Mm.
Yep.
Thank God we have solemn moments like this. Just a nice little comedy hour where we open up about talking about sexual assault and end on why comedy is ruined. That's right.
Locked in a room.
Away from the... We did have chocolate and tea.
Yeah.
That's right. Well, you had a liquid salad. That's right. Liquid salad, by the way, is the name of my fantasy football team.
I like that. Liquid salad.
Liquid salad.
Makes sense.
It is
not. I think that tells a lot about...
Have you ever done any fantasy things like that? Are you like sports guy at all?
No, I'm not a sports guy at all. I almost see sports fandom almost like nationalism. It feels weird to me to be so upset or so happy and take so much pride in this group of strangers assembled from various places in the world playing a game that you have no stake in. It feels like a distraction to me. I mean, when the Jays are in the World Series, I mean, I can get caught up in it. And if I go to a game, I'll cheer and stuff. But it's not something I follow. I think the World Series is still on. I don't know
if it's done.
Someone won the whole thing.
It just did.
So it was either Houston or Los Angeles. That's okay, right. So I feel pretty good that I knew
It was not Los Angeles. It was Houston.
Houston won. Okay,
that's right.
And I feel like those were people that no one would have bet on for years to ever win a World Series. They're not like the top. Usually it's the Yankees. And
all it took was mass destruction of their home city.
Right.
To really rally the troops.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure that did great for morale.
Absolutely it did. They deserve that win.
Yeah, hopefully, it won them some paper towel rolls or something.
I'm with you on the tribalism. That is something.
Yeah. Well, in soccer, it's a bigger thing. I think people actually fight, physical fight. I don't understand.
Absolutely.
It. What does this have to do with you? Be a fan of whatever you want. I don't care.
I don't mind telling you, fuck Colorado. I said it.
Yeah.
Fuck Colorado.
And it's a bunch of guys like you.
That's right.
And then a bunch of guys from Colorado.
That's right. Have I ever been to Colorado? No.
You'll never
Am I pronouncing
know.
It right 50% of the time? Who gives a shit? Fuck Colorado. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
And here we have this thing with Montreal and Toronto, too. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody says, I mean, the Leafs do suck. I mean, everybody in Toronto knows that. Mm-hmm. But if you say that to a Montreal person, like the Habs suck, like you're in for an argument.
Oh, mathematically they do. Look at it.
Yeah.
They're just awful this year. They are just
What bugs me though is when I see two teams play and say it's 4-3 or something at the end, and then someone says, "Yeah, that other team sucks." And I think
they got three past you, pal.
And how great is our team if they're only playing teams that suck and beating them?
Right.
No, they're both great teams. If you want our team to seem special, say they beat a great team. Yeah. Say it was a great game. Mm-hmm. I don't get when people boo when another team scores. Mm-hmm. Who are you booing? The people who played better than us?
Yeah.
Or are you booing our own guys? Mm-hmm. Either way, it doesn't seem very doesn't make sense to me.
That said, fuck Colorado.
Okay.
All right. Jason, it has been way too long. For you to,
oh, I'm sorry.
For you to have been
I see what you mean.
No. Oh no, we're done. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, you know, oh, we've had it with you.
It's been too long, but it's been too.
It's
long.
It's been too. He does doing the cutthroaty motion. So what projects are you working on now? What do you got coming up?
Well, I got the Comedy Album Book Club, which I told you about. I just wrapped 40 episodes of a new cartoon coming out next fall called Chop Chop Ninja.
Beautiful.
I play two of the four leads, which is cool, and then a whole bunch of incidental characters. So that's super fun. I'm teaching now that I'm back in Toronto. I'm teaching again my Find Your Voice workshops.
Beautiful.
The voiceover workshops, which you have
taken. I have taken, and it's made me the voice actor I am today.
Take what you will from that, folks. And
results not guaranteed.
And, I've also been teaching another class. I used to do sketch comedies, you know, in a troupe called Radio Vault, and it was sort of audio-based comedy. So my partner from that show, Neil Jones, and I are teaching at the Social Capital Theater. What's it called? From script to voice to stage.
Okay.
And it's how to perform a radio play in front of a live audience. So
how
it's an
awesome.
8-week class.
Mm-hmm.
We do a lot of writing. We do performance exercises. And they sort of help produce the show. We decide on a poster together. We create a Facebook event together. They invite a bunch of people. We decide what the pay is, how much it's going to cost. So it's actually this coming Wednesday, which is the 8th.
Okay.
November 8th.
Yep.
And I believe the show is at 8 p.m. I should know this. At Social Capital Theater. If you look up Social Capital Theater on the website you'll find it on my Facebook page. And so the students, part of the course, the 9th class, is actually they perform the show live at Social Capital Theater on the stage. So we just did the final read through last night. The scripts are great. They've really come along. And it's really fun to be part of it. Just from an editor and to sort of coach them. And it feels really good. So I think we're going to do that again next spring, Neil and I. And it's fun to watch these people to do something a little different than the standard comedy class.
You know? So fun.
Yeah. So that's what's happening.
Okay.
And, you know, as you know, I'm also a voice director and I'm currently looking for opportunities doing that. I'm going to be doing a supervising sound editor on a film that I can't talk about yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm excited to do
it. It wouldn't
sound
be an episode with you without not being able to
be
talk
some
about
secrets.
Something.
There
you go.
Yeah, and I just celebrated 2 years of marriage with my lovely wife.
Nice, isn't
October
it?
25th.
Eh?
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So yeah, life is good, man. No complaints.
That's right. And fuck Colorado. They can find you online where, Jason?
Well, I'm on Twitter, although I'm not as big a fan as of the platform as I used to be, but
why is that?
I'm not sinking down that hole right now. But yeah, at Jason DeLine,
beautiful.
You can find some stuff there. Also, I think at Comedy Book Club. It's probably easier to go to the website. Comedyalbumbookclub.com. I'm searchable on Facebook. I'm on IMDb. And
beautiful.
I think I'm on Instagram as DeLine Man. DeLineMan.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Is that enough? Jesus.
That's
what
fine.
Age are we living in? How many ways do I need people to be able to find me?
Do you have an InstaChat or Super Schmush or whatever?
Probably.
it comes with a Netflix subscription.
Yeah, exactly. You
know?
Yeah.
I signed up for Amazon Prime and I've got this now.
Yep.
I don't know what it is. Dick Pickery. That's it. Ladies and gentlemen, speaking of Twitter, you can follow this very podcast on the Twitter, at CATP Podcast. That is right, folks. Cat P. You can follow me personally at HeyStVA. Go to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. You know the drill. 5-star rating. Talk shit about us in the commentary.
Right.
5-star ratings. Five stars, say what talk shit about us in the commentary. What do I want to talk about us? Shit. That is what I want. Shit in the commentary.
Can't wait.
Make sure you check out our sponsors, who are this episode, HelloFresh.
HelloFresh.
Go CATP50. Get 50% off your first box. Ladies and gentlemen, on behalf of Jason, the erstwhile Darcy, and myself, when you listen to Cat Pee, you're in for a good time. Jimmy, you are always the podcat.
Lately, I find I rush. Can't piece together the sun and the sky or the spots on my face. Be stuck, my feet already are. I must be lost, my feet already are. And I must be fast, my feet already are. And you'll soon be just your deeds already
Hello there, podcast listeners. This is Professor Buzzkill. We do a weekly romp through some of the history myths that are most deeply embedded in modern culture. We bust those myths, but also show why the history surrounding them is so important. Expert historians come to the Buzzkill Institute to help us in our labors, and we often interview specialists at universities around the world. And we have fun destroying quotes dubiously attributed to Churchill, Gandhi, and many others. Listen to Professor Buzzkill on the Antica Network and become the smartest person around.